XOXO JK is brought to you by National Machine. National Machine is a Minneapolis-based tech collective that builds digital products, systems, and experiences. Their services include design, engineering, hosting, content creation, and strategy. They are extremely productive grown-ups who love what they do. And that's cool. Get in touch with them at nationalmachine.co. I'm Kate O'Reilly.
I'm Ashley Crone.
You're listening to XOXO.
JK.
A podcast about life. The good stuff, the real stuff, the funny stuff, and everything in between. Today, this is so exciting.
Yay.
We welcome special guest Mo Perry,
Hey-o.
Who is a writer and actor in Minneapolis here and beyond. Currently can be seen in the Guthrie's The Royal Family, which runs, tell me how to say the word, proscenium.
Proscenium.
Proscenium. Mm-hmm. I knew I would get one vowel wrong. The proscenium stage through March 19th. And we will link to details on how to buy tickets and get more information in the show notes.
Is that also the Thrust stage? Is that the same thing?
No. So there's the Thrust and the proscenium.
Oh.
And the Dowling, which is the Black Box Studio.
Uh-huh.
So those are the three stages.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Welcome, Mo.
Thanks.
I'm so glad you're here.
Super glad to be here.
So, okay.
Long-time listener, first-time guest.
yes. So more back to the stages. So the Black Box is the one that used to be sort of like over in the North Loop, like for the more like spontaneous or creative projects. It used to be kind of off-site, I remember.
Yeah, and that space still exists. That is called the Guthrie Lab, and it's still called that.
Oh, okay.
It's no longer affiliated with the Guthrie. I don't believe there's like an ownership relationship
anymore. Okay,
okay. But that's still a venue that exists. But yeah, the Dowling Studio is definitely a smaller venue, but very malleable and like can be completely shape-shifted and very much lends itself to kind of more experimental, edgy new stuff. And the proscenium and the Thrust generally tend to kind of follow along the sort of the classical regime that the Guthrie kind of commits itself to.
Yeah. Yes. Is this so, first things first, is this your first Guthrie experience?
It's not. It's my second.
It's your second.
My first was the Heidi Chronicles a few years ago.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Oh my gosh. Awesome. And was that in the new building?
It was, yep, and it was on the Thrust. So this is my first time on the proscenium stage.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, my second Guthrie show.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
And Guthrie is one of the only theaters in the country that doesn't have like a, what is it called, a troupe? Or a
company.
A company. Company.
Actually, yeah. Companies have become really rare. Children's Theater Company is like one of the only theaters in the country that does still have a company.
Okay, so I had that reversed.
Yeah,
okay.
But the Guthrie did used to have a company.
Okay.
You know, back in the Garland Wright days in the 80s and early 90s, I believe. And a lot of those people who were in the company are still Guthrie regulars.
Okay.
But now they do not have a regular company. So we're all just giggers. We just gig, you know,
wow.
And we just work when someone deigns to say it's our turn.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine there's benefits to both. But this is more like equitable for actors in general to not have to like become a part of this troupe or I can't. Why did I have this mental block
company.
On the word company?
Yeah.
Company, and then like, company. And then I bet there's things that happen within companies that are sort of, you know, like everyone, like there's this one woman who always gets this one role, type of role.
Oh, or, I thought you were going to say like don't sleep with someone who's in your company.
Or
like,
that.
Right.
Like when you go to college, you're like, don't sleep with someone who lives in your dorm.
Or your quad. Like don't sleep with someone who lives in your quad. That's like rule number one.
Don't poop where you eat.
Don't poop where yes. you eat.
Mm-hmm. Yes. See, I worked poop in nice and early.
We always talk about poop. Yeah.
There we go.
It's so important.
Like the first poop drop.
That's so good. I mean, we are like 3:46 here. So
Killing it.
I just eyeballed it. I'm not sure. I'm not really sure. Kyle will correct me for sure, our producer. So congrats on getting this role. This
Thanks.
Is so cool. So there is it like 12, a dozen, 15 people?
Oh my God. I don't even know how many people are in the show. I would have to do a count. It's a huge cast. Yeah. I would say 12 off the top of my head. I would have to go through and count, and that would be boring to listen to. But
I was researching on the site, and
yeah.
I think that's what my little sample size
capture.
Yeah. About I mean, my my dressing room mate, Tatiana Williams, who just played Belle in A Christmas Carol.
Oh, my gosh.
There and is beautiful and wonderful and super charming and talented. She, her part, the play is 3 hours long. She literally comes on at like the 2-hour, 50-minute mark and has like
what
two lines. It, she's, you know, she, oh, I won't spoil it, but
no,
she, what she is,
no.
But she, it's just like the smallest role imaginable. And she gets a full on equity contract and like health wow. insurance weeks and everything. It's kind of like the greatest gift from the theater gods.
Right.
And she gets to kick back in the dressing room. She gets a late call. She gets to kick back in the dressing room for like the first couple hours of
right.
Of the play, and then
oh my gosh,
yeah, it's like they do not write plays like this anymore. I mean, you can tell this thing was written in the 20s and the 30s because now playwrights around the country, I mean, like rule number one is we can only afford to hire four actors, so write, you know, of either a four character play or if there are more characters, it needs to be able to be double cast, so every actor can play like two or three roles.
I have noticed the role thing because I have like a I don't even know what it is, like a super memory for faces. And so like when some, like my partner who I have, or my companion won't notice that it was one person playing three roles. Like I'm like a total like, so I have noticed that becoming more.
Yeah. Double casting.
Popular.
And that's fun too. You know, I mean, that's fun from an acting standpoint, but it's also like, you know, we all need our health insurance weeks and our paychecks and whatever. So the more work for the more actors, the better.
I mean, amen.
Yeah.
Let's put that in our scripture.
Right?
Yes, please.
Yeah. Like, that's just what the world needs right now, especially. So I was really surprised.
Health insurance and art, right? We're talking about both of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Seriously.
We need both of those things.
For sure. Gosh.
Seriously. So the, so I was really interested to see that there was only 4 weeks of rehearsals.
This one was super tight. We had like 3 weeks of rehearsal before we started.
What?
I know.
Like previews.
Yeah. Wait, so what is like typical?
It. I feel like it used, there used to be one more week of rehearsal specifically at the Guthrie, and then it got trimmed probably as a cost saving measure. You know what? But that's probably the trade off. One of the trade offs when you choose plays that, you know, employ a dozen actors and they're all being paid a nice living wage and getting health insurance benefits and stuff. It's like you gotta, you know. When God closes a door, he opens a window, and the reverse is true. So we had, you know, a tighter timeline to get it done in. And it was, the pressure was on. But we pulled it off, and we did it, and we opened last night, and I think we
opened last night.
There.
So, so do you have, so do you guys show up? Do y'all? I should say y'all. I've been trying to turn Justin from you guys to y'all.
Oh, y'all's really good. Fun.
Right?
Y'all.
These are all, this is all part of my being uncomfortable practice that we were talking about in the previous episode that we recorded today. Like just getting into these new habits, things you don't even notice.
Totally.
But so do y'all show up prepared? I mean, do you have your stuff in?
Some more than others.
Okay, because I have to imagine with only 3 weeks to work together that...
Yeah, I mean, it depends. You know, I play the maid. So did I, like, memorize any of my 15 lines before rehearsal? No, 3 weeks was plenty of time for me to do that. Now, Elizabeth Franz, who is a 3-time Tony Award winner, amazing, amazing actress and woman, she plays Fanny, sort of the matriarch in the play, and has epic lines. And she showed up like off book for the read through.
Wow.
So, you know, that it's kind of player's choice. It's kind of if you think you can get there in the time allotted, great. And if not, I mean, you know, the Lear is rehearsing for the thrust right now. And I think those guys were doing text work and memorization well before the first day because Lear is no maid.
Right. Well, know? Everything is, I mean, it's a different thing entirely.
Yeah.
I just saw the production photo or the rehearsal photos on Facebook for that show, which I think they're doing such a brilliant job of giving people behind the scenes look.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
At like people, I think that is so brilliant. I don't know whose idea it was, but kudos to them.
It's so cool.
Cause that's the work I do in my, you know, my day job. Is that sort of look and giving people like getting people excited about
things. Like little teasers.
Some way. So that whoever decided to do that is so smart. It's just like the, I always call it the Project Runway effect, that
like,
these people are sewing and we are just like eyeballs on, right? Mm-hmm. And it's such a, like, people absolutely love to see those inner workings and then see it transformed on the stage.
Totally agree. So. And that was one of the big shifts that happened with the new artistic administration. Joe Hodge came in and literally cut holes in the rehearsal room doors and put in windows where there weren't windows. I mean, which is kind of like the most physical manifestation of what you're talking about, but also instituted this policy that it's all open rehearsals. Anyone can come in unless there is a specific, unless the director says specifically, like, this scene we're working is sensitive and is a closed rehearsal. It's an open rehearsal policy. Anyone can just go hang out and watch a rehearsal.
Wait, so like I could just walk into the Guthrie one of rehearsals and be like, yeah, I'm just going to go in there and watch it.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
Like, what? I know.
Well, and I can't imagine the pressure on, I mean, certain types of people, actors or not, really require that time to be internal, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
But that could require, or like turn on some different things in people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, so like I've gone in and watched some Lear rehearsals and they could peek in and watch ours. And that's mostly how it works, is people in the building and producer, the, you know, the the staff kind of pop down and watch for a little while. That's mostly how it plays out. But yeah, it's a mind shift for sure.
I'm totally going to put that on my like list of things to do. Like my like tourist in my own hometown. Totally.
Yeah. We did that when the boys were small after the building opened a few times. We would just make the trek down to Gold Medal and up into the, what is it called? The spire or the, you know, the walk, the catwalk sort of.
Oh, the endless bridge.
Endless bridge. Mm-hmm. And just to get like our bot, like especially in winter, to get some like large motor skills working.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I'm really excited to see it. And I read the, I remember you telling me about it and then reading the description. Because when you first were cast, I feel like it was a while back and it was mostly just the news of you being cast that we shared. And I don't even think I asked which show. Maybe I should have. Maybe this is part of protocol that I missed. But the, I remember then going online to find details and I shared it with my partner Kyle's mom because they have their season ticket holders and they have a strong family tradition of seeing shows. So I wanted to share that I had someone in a show coming up if she was going to see that. And I remember reading the description and then having it being described as a comedy and the family, like part of it really made me excited. And then like the idea that it was sort of the like royals, I've always, you know, I think there's a fascination on my part.
Absolutely.
We just finished watching The Crown. So I feel like there could be like,
And good that's actually tie-ins. Like something that I have to kind of explain. Just every time I say I'm doing the show, The Royal Family, people are like, oh, so it's about the British royal family. And it's like, no, it's actually, it's about like the, it's essentially based on the Barrymores, which were like the royal family of Broadway in the 20s and 30s.
Oh, okay.
So it's a fictional family called the Cavendishes, but loosely based on the Barrymores of like Drew Barrymore fame, you know, and John Barrymore. And this,
she's my favorite. We share the same birthday.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just like the generations of actors. And so kind of at their peak of Broadway fame and power and majesty. Right. So it's very much about art and play and, whimsy and family and, you know, like what it means to kind of voluntarily or involuntarily feel that that's your, that's what you've been handed in life is this profession just by sheer accident of birth.
Well, and like the togetherness that you have to, you know, like feel like being watched or being, and it is like Hollywood is still that way in some ways. Yeah. Like I think a lot of people thought like Brad and Angelina were this like people worth following or. Mm-hmm.
And and this production in particular plays a lot, I think, with the idea of like what it means to perform and then like live authentically and what the, where the line is and when the line disappears your life is sort of performance. And
well, I think that's so like, big. I feel like that line has really blurred a lot with social media.
For sure.
You know, and people, I mean, even not just celebrities, but so many people like you have to perform your life or it seemed like for a while people were only posting all the good stuff, and there's been that swing to being like, no, I'm going to post about
what's
real. You know, the thing that mm-hmm. comes into my mind, I have friends of mine who have become mothers and just like posting photos like, here's this room where my kid, like everything is destroyed and they're screaming, or they'll post like a cute photo and then like, yeah. And then 2 minutes after they just had a tantrum for 45 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And so trying to bring that
They cried because they asked for yogurt and I gave them yogurt. That was always my like, what is happening right now?
When I hear things like that, it makes me be like, maybe I don't want to have kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know who is really good at that celebrity-wise is Chrissy Teigen.
Oh my God, I love her.
I do too. Yep. Her cookbook, I'm obsessed. I got to stop talking about it right now because I'm totally obsessed with her. But the cookbook is amazing. Don't let anyone tell you differently. I grew up in a chef's kitchen. Yeah.
I did not know that.
Like, it's totally legit. And like her mom contributes recipes. Pepper is her mom. She's Thai. Her dad contributes recipes. John contributes recipes. Her husband, John Legend, who's halfway to an EGOT. I didn't know.
Oh my God,
I'm on a major tangent. Please allow it.
I love tangents.
Oh, yeah.
You're bringing it back with the EGOT.
Seriously, that's is good. Like, she's approaching it so well. Mothering, she's got like a 9-month-old.
Wow.
She's like, when she's awake, I want her to be sleeping. And when she's sleeping, I want her to be awake. And I was like, I needed her so much when I was like having my first baby. This is the way you feel all the time. You're with someone all the time and you've never been lonelier. Like, it's seriously the weirdest.
Sounds terrifying.
It is terrifying. Sure. But I feel like that the switch into, you know, like coming from when we didn't have these constant approaches into mm-hmm. the lives of, mm-hmm. you know, the Cavendishes or the Barrymores, mm-hmm. where they weren't sure how they had to act everywhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like, there is this amount of fame that I've always said, like, you reach this certain amount of fame, and if you don't have people around you that are feeding you the truth, you go insane, right? Like, let's just name Whitney Houston, Mel mm-hmm. Gibson, Michael Jackson, Mariah Carey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, and it's fame. It's not necessarily just actors who, you know, I mean, I think singers play a role. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, like Stephen King, I think is maybe arguably one of the famous like living authors. He seems like he's doing okay.
Yeah,
but I'm thinking of like other disciplines where nobody's telling you the truth. Like you,
Kanye.
Oh God,
Britney, Britney, Christina. Like somebody needs to tell Christina.
Yeah,
something's up.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm the one to tell her today. Hey, girl, do you want to talk? Because I'm here for you.
Yeah,
I just feel like there is that. If they don't have that thing where they are like mentally well enough, or they mm-hmm. have like regular people from their childhood, like Taylor Swift has, like she has all these like people from that grew up, came up with her, or Amy Schumer does too. She has like her sister is her manager. And I feel like that's the missing thing in these other people's lives.
It's kind of hard to tell sometimes, like, are creative people more prone to kind of like crazy drama in their lives just or is it the creative life that sort of invites that? You know, it's kind of like a chicken and egg mm-hmm. question. Like, am I creative because I'm inherently dramatic, or is it the fact that my life is organized in the arts that kind of is destabilizing and makes me insane?
That's crazy.
Yeah. No, that makes me think about that line from High Fidelity, where mm-hmm. it's like, did I listen to pop music because I was sad, or am I sad because I listened to pop music?
Right. Yeah.
Yes. But then again, Nick Hornsby, writer. You know.
Yeah. But either way, you know, like, it's the life for me. You know, that intensity and that variety, it's just like, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah. It takes a lot out of you. I mean, even singing for me with the choir mm-hmm. was, I would have to come, like, I couldn't socialize afterwards and I'd have to come home.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, take a nap and get completely out of what I mm-hmm. dressed up to wear.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's the same for everyone. But I feel like I love it when I'm there
uh-huh.
and then I just need to be like pulled up by copter
mm-hmm.
and like dropped elsewhere.
Yeah.
Just like the claw toy.
Yeah. Maybe some people have like a higher capacity for it.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of like the professional actors I know for sure, like have a home with dogs and a partner who, you know, is like, we're okay, like, I'm going to go do this crazy lifestyle of art and insecurity of all kinds, economic, emotional, need for validation, need for like, am I doing this right? Am I, and then, so having some stability and like sanity and security and comfort in your life to balance that out is soft clothes and blankets and a dog. And, you know, I think,
and the constant, kind of, I think pets, like we've talked about that before.
Oh God, yeah.
When I've seen it with a number of friends, but you in particular, Jen, who's my regular co-host, like the addition of a dog in both of their lives was, I mean, I don't even know how to say it.
It's transformative. Like
yes, it is.
And you have a dog.
I do.
Yeah, I have it. I had one until a few years ago, and he was old, but he was like, that constant is a really big thing that I miss.
Yeah, and the need to like be a caretaker, I think, is, you know.
Yeah, yeah, even when we kind of resist that, you know?
Uh-huh.
So I feel like as creative people, too, that there's a need to take care of ourselves and, like, feed ourselves. And maybe the distribution of wealth, as far as that goes, like, with a dog or a partner, creating consistency is, like, maybe that's part of the key, too, is, like, not having only yourself to feed that into.
Totally.
So maybe that's part of the theory too, is the distribution of wealth is good. But I really saw that when you got Hawk the dog.
Oh, Hawk the dog. I was so sad I couldn't bring him today. Oh.
We saw a Hawk buddy or doppelganger this morning on our way to swim. Yep. And it came up. We said, and I said, we saw him walking with his owner, with his human on the way to swim. And I was like, this is what I imagine that dog legs sound like in his own head.
Because
it's these super puffy dog and then these tiny little stick legs.
Yeah.
It's like your Aunt Jean, you know, the like apple shaped lady with the tiny legs coming out, and you're like, she has like G breasts and then her legs, like she has like a size.
How do those support your body?
I know. You think she might just tip completely.
Mm-hmm. But amazing, I was
like, this is what that dog's legs sound like in his head.
I pretty much played that noise in my head one of the like 8 times that I let Hawk out this morning. Like, I whistled for him and he was on the other side of the yard.
Oh.
And he started, then it was, yeah, it was just so fast.
He's so cute.
So normal.
Yeah, we saw one of his siblings, I think, this morning. He's really cute.
It could be. Or maybe one of his progeny. He was...
oh, that's right.
He was a sex slave in a puppy mill. So he's a baby daddy many times over.
OMG.
It's very possible. Yeah. And he doesn't, like... You know how, like, he's not typecast. Do you know what I mean? He doesn't look like that's what he did.
Like a sex slave?
He doesn't. Do you know, like, you think of certain...
certain types of dogs are just, like, getting after it. I will say, though, so...
Like the big, bald...
Yeah,
Doberman.
Just like, it's sort of like when you saw that Joe Manganiello was cast in Big... Or in...
Magic Mike.
Magic Mike. You're like, of course he was.
You're like, sure. Of course he was, like, and thank you.
Right, and thank you for that. And congrats, really, on all of that, too. Yeah.
And another reason I want to be Sofia Vergara.
I know.
Oh, I added it to the list.
Is she and your dog?
Yeah. Oh. Wabi.
Wabi.
Wabi. Wabi.
Three-legged.
Named for Wabi Sabi, the Japanese aesthetic of the beauty of imperfection. He's three-legged.
Wow.
That's
deep.
Mutt. He's beautiful. He's a beautiful soul. He's all he so wants to do is cuddle and run. Yeah, he's a runner.
And you guys love the dog park, right?
Yeah.
The big dog parkers.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I miss the dog park so much.
Yeah. It can be a little touch and go sometimes, but, you know, just screw up your courage and hope for the best. And
yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, sometimes it can get a little chaotic. Yeah. I mean, he's been
roughed up,
you know, a few times, but, I think the big dog park in particular is awesome. I think the Minnehaha one, because they have so much stimulus, and it's the smaller ones, like the one here in Columbia Heights or in
Columbia
Northeast, that can get a little like stagnant energy, I think. And so they have nothing to focus on but each other. And then
it has
a little
like a hill
scarier
in the middle.
Yeah.
So I feel like they can't see either side when you're on one or the other.
When it's just like this strip of wood chips, you know, and yeah. all they really have to focus on is each other. It can get a little intense. But like Minnehaha is this oasis of dog paradise with the river and the trees and the paths. And it's, you know, acres and acres and acres. And so right. I think that tends to open up kind of the
yeah,
that
that's
energy
beautiful.
A little
I love
bit.
Seeing pictures yeah. of that.
I feel like I'm hearing a lot of correlations to potentially like children. So I've had this theory, like I have two nephews that are 6 and 2 mm-hmm. And they were talking about going so to this cute. Indoor playground and, you know, there are a few different playgrounds and parks that we've taken them to. And I always find that like when there's
no, you're so right.
bigger.
Yeah.
So I've had this, I've had two theories. One is that I always thought having a dog would be good training, like good training wheels for potentially having mm-hmm. children. Mm-hmm. But then going on that in the last 2 years, I've also had this thought. I'm like kind of, I'm mildly terrified to have kids, but also my job is kids. So mm-hmm. it's a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. But I have this theory that I would be a really amazing stepmom if I could be parenting with other people.
Yeah.
And
you would be.
And not having to do it 100% of the time.
That's yeah. probably a better
that,
parallel.
I feel like that's
to
weird to say, but.
Yeah. That's a better way to be a biological parent, for, yeah. to be completely yeah. honest. It's an ideal way to parent.
Yeah.
Like if you have a good co-parent, mm-hmm. being divorced is, when with kids is. Much better than being married with kids.
Because it's like the dog. Like you can be like, well, peace out. Mama's going out to the movies for
right?
a while.
And all sorts of like purists know? And whoever. I don't know what would are going to completely wince at that statement. But I've been there. I've been both mm-hmm. places. And this is far better. Like without a supportive and stable co-parent, mm-hmm. no fucking way.
Right. Yeah.
But with that. It's ideal. And I remember seeing that on the opposite, like still being married and seeing that outside mm-hmm. and being like, this could be really good for me and my mental health too. Mm-hmm. Getting regular breaks, not yeah. like these breaks where you're like, I got to get out of the house. But like every Sunday through Tuesday.
Yeah. Getting to like cultivate your own
work,
identity.
Work, work, prep.
Outside of.
Yes. Cultivate my identity again. Because I stayed home too. So yeah. it's. Crazy, but mm-hmm. It's totally ideal. And you're right. Your instincts are right. You would be a kick-ass.
Thank you.
Stepmom. You would. Hey, cool segue. Mo is recently engaged.
Yep.
You got engaged to your sweetheart.
I did. I proposed.
Really?
Mo Perry.
I did.
Yeah, girl.
That's
get
a little
after
fun
it.
Nugget I that I didn't
it.
Drop. Yeah.
I know that on your post you said you became engaged, which yeah. I thought was a very modern way to put it.
Yeah.
But that's so cool.
We had been talking about it. I mean, it wasn't yeah. like a like huge gamble
do.
Or anything. It yeah. was like we knew this was on the horizon. And we were going to Santa Fe for our 5-year anniversary. And Quinn was sort of like, maybe we should just elope over there. Maybe we should just, you know. And I was like, and I had actually already like went and got a ring. So I was like, no, can't do that. Sorry. And he was like, well, okay. And I was like, no further discussion. We're not eloping. But then like, cause I knew I was going to, you know,
use the shut it down card.
I don't want ooh, a lot of right, traditions. Like I'm not attached to a lot of the traditional stuff around marriage. I actually yeah. was like really convinced for most of my life that it was not something I wanted at all ever. Mm-hmm. And now I found this fella and I do, as it turns out, want to yeah. marry him. But I don't need like a big wedding and I don't need a lot of the trappings that go along with that traditionally. But I did want like a formal moment where it became official that we were mm-hmm. mutually deciding to enter into this and a little period of engagement and planning and, you know, just living in that space
yeah.
for a minute
yeah.
before we.
It's so important to just get whatever comes to mind, is what you want for
yeah.
it. Mm-hmm. It's so sweet. There's such a sweetness to it that where does that exist anymore?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We get to just kind of design it, you know?
So tell us more about that.
So yeah, I mean the event itself will just be in the park by our house with some pizza.
Nice.
And you know, like it's going to be delicious. A summer afternoon kind of thing. And that's exactly as much as we know right now, as far as details and planning. That's all.
That's great.
But and yeah, so the step parenting part of this.
Yeah. So Quentin has two children.
Quentin has two kids. And they are beautiful and amazing. They're 16 and 18, 16-year-old boy, 18-year-old girl.
Oh, wow.
Sophomore and a senior okay. in high school. And yeah, I have this whole thing about like step parent. I actually hate the word stepmom. It really freaks me out.
We don't use it at all.
Because I'm I'm like, what does it even mean? I'm obviously not their mom. They have a very cool mom.
Negative
who's
sounding.
Very present and mm-hmm. like awesome. And I would never want to step on her toes. I'm actually like super sensitive to any way in which I could be perceived to be stepping on her toes or undermining her or whatever. Like, I so just want to be her backup support cheering section.
I never thought about it as stepping, like step and step, like stepping
Oh, that's
on
interesting.
Toes.
Yeah. No, I hadn't made that connection either. So I think there should be a new word, and I think that word should be sparent.
Oh, I really love portmanteaus.
Mm-hmm, me too.
Oh, it's when you combine two words. Smog is smoke and fog. So spare and parent is a portmanteau.
Sparent.
Sparent.
Yep. Spare parent.
Yeah.
And it's like a spare tire. Spare and, parent. You know, it's like I'm in the trunk. And in a crisis, I have got your back.
Yeah.
But like, you got four tires and I'm happy to be along for the ride.
I love that.
You know what
I do. I thought you were combining step for whatever reason.
Mm.
And no, parent. Yes, but that parent. Makes sense now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm totally going to start using that. Let's make this a thing.
Yeah. I'm like working on an essay
about
it.
Let's submit it
right
to
now.
Urban Dictionary ASAP.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to go so far as to make it a hashtag?
Hashtag sparent. I'm on board.
I love it.
Yeah.
My best friend is seeing someone that has kids, and she saw herself. It's really her first like official boyfriend of her adult life.
Yeah.
Like someone she's seeing for longer than a few dates.
Mm-hmm.
And he has, but she really saw herself, especially like approaching 40, like saw herself more as that because mm-hmm. the people in her sort of dating pool had all had children. And then also not, you know, being outside of the zone of having her own biological children.
Yeah.
And she hadn't explored options outside mm-hmm. of that. But and she has four nieces and nephews, and that is a lot of, you know, if you have a lot of exposure to them is kind of practicing too in
it
a
is.
Way like yeah. having like lots of exposure to, especially with your brother or sister's kids, like the negative and the bad sides of it and not just the good.
Right.
Because you have those moments if you're close at all with your siblings,
mm-hmm. yeah,
to
when
see
you can
like
see both
the breakdowns yeah. and the shitty parts
for sure.
But that's it. I think you're right about the, and I truly consider like people that consider relationships with people who have children. Like I have the kindest thoughts of anyone about those people because I really saw myself on the other side of that
right.
where I was like, I'm leaving this with two children and I've been staying at home for 8 years and I'm running a business
mm-hmm.
and that's what my life is going to be now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to run my business and I'm going to raise my boys and I'm probably going to have safe sex with someone or some people,
mm-hmm.
but that's what my life looked like for mm-hmm. me. And it wasn't protective. It was just like, I don't think this anyone will want this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I'm in a different place that way now too.
Yeah.
Where I know I'm worthy of good love and a relationship and a partner.
As we all are.
Right. But I just feel like I was on the other side of that thinking like, who would want this?
And I think it's inherently harder for women in that position, for moms in that position, than it is for dads. And I don't know if that's because...
Yeah. Yes.
Like, women are more... prone to be, you know, if you're adaptive, if this person I'm dating has kids, women I think are just more socialized to be like, well, I have been socialized to be this nurturing figure who accepts children mm-hmm. into my life.
And yes.
So there are fewer barriers in, you know, whereas a single man looking at like dating a woman who has kids might have, and I don't know, I have nothing to back this up statistically.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's,
it's just a hunch.
Yeah. I think you're right. And I didn't really want my kids to have step brothers and sisters either. So like the idea of dating someone with kids who was like, in my mind then, equal to me, sort of on the...
Yeah.
Oh, having like an equal life
experience. And now it's like, it's so much more common now. And like, it's just, like 7 or 8 years ago, this wasn't as common as it is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we didn't talk about it as much either. So there's two things at work. I mean, divorce was common, but... nobody talked about how it could work.
Right.
Even that long ago. It's crazy.
Yeah. Or just talked about the hard stuff. Like for me, my dad, both my parents were married twice and my dad had kids. So I have a half brother and a half sister. So I guess, technically I have six.
Oh
nephews.
Yeah. There we go. That could,
but it was a very hard relationship. Oh. Like there was not good co-parenting.
Which one with your,
With my dad and his ex-wife, there was just a lot of, there's like, wasn't a lot of common, I don't know, practices and routines and stuff.
Yeah.
And so it just, I mean, it strains their relationship to this day. And like, I'm not super close with my half siblings and I don't see my other four nephews that often.
Yeah.
So
blended families are tough. It's a big, and I joined a couple like secret Facebook groups, you know, for stepmoms and read a bunch of books and stuff. And it's amazing how common some of like the core struggles are and how universal they are. And there are some, big challenges for sure. But
yeah,
community helps, I think. And just being told that like you're sane and your perspective is natural. And it's a tough, because there, it's like standing next to a family and you're involved in the family, but, and you're supposed to fill this role of the adult female, but only in your house at certain times and not at others and only in certain ways and not at others. And you find yourself with these like parenting instincts arising. Mm-hmm. Like I observe myself having these parenting instincts about like how certain situations should be dealt with, or.
There's a lot of shoulds in those.
Yeah. Or
like
just
it's like how you were raised.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's all about how you were raised and, you know, these kind of unexamined instincts that you have about like what parenting looks like. And and it's not your place. Like you don't have an outlet for those instincts because your role is actually just to kind of support the two parents who are doing it in a really active sense. And
occasionally step in.
And occasionally, you know, like offer your perspective or your encouragement or your advice or whatever, but in a way that doesn't undermine their own instincts. It's really tough.
Yeah. Well, and really only when solicited.
Exactly.
Yes. Which is like all advice.
Or when you feel like they can hear it or it might be useful. And otherwise, like you got to have a place that you can go. Like I have a den off my bedroom that I'm like, I used it a lot in the early days where I was like, and now I go to the den while you parent.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It's tricky. And we had the same sort of thing happen. And right when you become a parent, either through biology or adoption, that like, and you help raise a child from an early age, like you develop just like any other job. You develop a set of skills through instincts, through research, through help with you, from your community and your parents or whomever. But when I've noticed when you step into it, step is probably the wrong choice of words, but that those things from childhood just kick in. I've noticed that too with my partner, Kyle, a few times where I'm like, that's actually totally wrong.
Yeah.
Or it's also occasionally checked what I was doing in a way that was good, right? Like I've compared the two kind of things. But really having to just like try and draw straight lines with, and not in an inappropriate way, as you say, you're, most of the time it comes from a really good place of like helpfulness, but having to just draw a straight line and say, that's not how we've ever done it. It's not how we're going to start doing it.
Right.
And it's actually pretty shitty.
Mm-hmm.
Like, right? But these things that, like, even my parents, like, growing up did the wrong thing a lot.
I mean,
they had three kids, so, right? It's 30% of the time they're doing it wrong.
Right.
That's what I say about my kids. I'm like, I have two kids, so 50% of the time I'm parenting wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I always say there's 100% chance that 50% of the time I'm parenting one of them wrong.
Nice.
Because they're human.
My God, they come through it, right? Like humans they are sturdy folks.
Yeah. Well, and making sure they have like roof over their head, food on their plates, like a warm, soft place to fall.
Right.
The function of parenting, not the, like the role of these like expectation part of parenting.
Yeah. So. My whole jam is just to like be there for as much as I can in as appropriate a way as possible now and build these relationships. And hopefully they will love me enough that they will change my diapers when I'm in the nursing home. because I'm not going to have biological children. Right. So these guys are it for me. And so
I thought it was just like, no, I'm going to take myself out before I'm wearing diapers in a nursing home. That's right. Yeah. That's where I jumped to right there.
Yeah.
I know. My parents have an agreement.
Yeah.
Oh,
like with each other.
Yeah.
Well, that they've shared.
If it comes to that, I hope they remember all the late night bowls of popcorn I made them.
They will.
Yeah.
They will.
Oh, yeah.
And I think even questioning and being conscientious, checking one book out from the library.
Oh, yeah.
Means you're doing a lot better than a lot of people.
For sure.
Who insert themselves in ways that are completely inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, congratulations again on your engagement.
Thanks.
I think you're doing a great job.
Thanks. I think you're doing a great job.
Thanks. I think you're doing a great job.
Aww.
I like that you've explored being a step parent.
I actually,
that's super cool.
Like, I actually think it's what I would prefer.
Me too.
It sounds, I mean, yeah, I think because it's a newer idea, mm-hmm. even though it obviously has existed for a while, but it wasn't something that was on my mind 5 years ago.
Right.
Like, I was kind of like, oh, I don't know if I want to date someone with kids. And just in the last couple of years, I'm just like, no, I think I would rather date someone with kids. Like, I'm totally cool dating whoever. Mm-hmm. But they're just, I think I have certain things where I'm like, I don't know if I want to pass on certain parts of my biology to kids. And I don't,
you
just
know
get
your
worried
mental health really
story.
Well, too.
Yeah. And I do. And I know both of my parents separately. And then when they like came together and then had me, and I was like, what? 2 + 2 did equal 4 in this situation. Mm-hmm. And I did not want all 4 of the things. And so, I don't know. There's just this part of me that feels like, if it's a guy who kind of has his shit together, he's going to be a better partner than someone who potentially doesn't.
For
and
sure.
I get that from having friends who are now married to men who were married before, one who had kids, one who didn't. And I'm just like, I think I really want to date divorced dads who've been to therapy.
Totally.
Just because like you know what went wrong in your previous
you had
relationship.
Your trial run.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now you're ready for the...
Mm-hmm. But like you figured out your shit and you realize this doesn't work in a relationship. And not that can't happen in long-term relationships or other stuff, but it's just, it's a different level.
I totally agree. They've leveled
up. Yeah. I think you're so right. I mean, I think that I've always had this like kind of ongoing theme of talking about how divorce isn't bad, that it's so good in so many ways and maybe in half the ways, maybe in the same amount of ways that it's bad, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, especially they know what they want in a relationship more and they've checked a lot of that stuff, like saying what they don't want, saying what they potentially do want. That's like a work that not a lot of people do.
Totally. Yeah.
That, you know, I mean, people that haven't been married, I don't know a lot of people that have done that work.
Yeah. And just the idea, especially too, of like, you're going to be more, I would hope people are more intentional about who you're bringing into your child's life.
For sure.
And about what you want for your children. Like, I obviously haven't experienced any of this, but I just have, my brother and sister-in-law are amazing. They have like a family motto and like they're extremely intentional about things. And so I just imagine that's what people are like who've been divorced and are seeking a life partner. Or like, you know, I know I'm going to have to be adding another adult in the mix who will have to do some parenting. And I just imagine in this beautiful, like, rose-colored glasses ideal way where, like, the 3 or 4 of you are sitting down talking about, like, what are the things that we want for these kids? What are the behaviors and, like, what are the ways that we are going to intervene when we want to discontinue a behavior and what do we want to encourage? What is okay for these kids to kind of experience?
Yeah,
I
I think you're dead on. And I think that anyone no one wants to introduce you to their kids like right away, like without checking you out first is.
And for a certain kind of independent woman, I think it also takes some pressure off. Like, you know that this man, his priorities are his children, like,
yes.
And are always going to be. So I don't know. For me, there was like a great deal of comfort in that, that I was never going, like too much pressure was ever going to be put on me as like the center of his life or of like, I could be there and occupy that space in a really like joyful, choice-based way without, and know that like when I want a girl's night out, He's got, you know, he's mm-hmm. spending one-on-one time with his son or his daughter. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, for me, it just like was in a built-in sense of balance and a spreading of attention and focus that I find really comforting because I'm kind of a flibberty gibbet and I don't want anyone to like put too much pressure on me to.
Yeah. I hear you.
I think that's exactly what occurred with my relationship with Kyle, mm-hmm. too. It's like it was nice to not have that pressure of having me be right up in his stuff all the time. Yeah. And it was more like I was the opposite. I was like, I could have to leave at any moment.
Right.
And I could have to like just leave this room or I could have to leave this.
And that's kind of
because
sexy.
You're not first.
Yeah.
And like mm-hmm. if you still want that. Like, and you keep showing up for that, then that means it's a good match.
For sure.
And if it's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you need someone that's kind of always there doing everything, mm-hmm. then I'm not for you.
Right.
Yeah.
And that, when you're in that like sort of emotionally broken state of after a divorce and becoming a single mom, like it's not like, I mean, you become a single mom, but you also become a single mom. Mm-hmm. Like you become it on paper, but you also become it inside your life. And like you're making food for fewer people and you're like planning out things without a partner. And like, mm-hmm. so being able to, I don't even remember where I was going, but put that on someone. In the broken emotional state. It was mm-hmm. like, I was like, I don't fucking care. You want to hang out sometime? Like, it was almost like in a good way, like not in a way that I was rude mm-hmm. to him or anything, but in a way that was like detached enough.
Yeah.
To not have that like weird girl shit in the beginning of a relationship.
Totally.
Yeah, of the clingy, of just the uncertainty.
Yeah.
That I feel like more easily have been socially conditioned to be able to express or comes across as like clinger because there is all that uncertainty and like what?
Yeah.
And if you have enough detachment or enough independence on your own, then you don't feed as much energy into that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I've always said like women in the beginning of relationships and what I've seen in my friends and myself is we're like, it's like the Matrix, the guy who bends all the way back.
Oh, yeah.
And men are like, do you fit with my current state of being?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And totally. Men are like, if you don't, I am going to exit left.
Yeah. Yeah.
And women are like, I can morph this way. I can morph right. I can morph God. Back.
That's so
I
true.
Can, right. And like, so this is obviously the better approach. I'm gesturing to my left hand, which is the male in this situation. This is obviously the better approach. So I was there mm-hmm. in like whatever state, not even intentionally in that moment. And I think that helped. But when you talk about your situation, like you're Kyle in my situation, you know, so it's like I could talk about it endlessly. It's fascinating to hear.
Yeah.
Like what approach you took or what.
We've actually talked about, Quentin and I have talked about writing a book, co-writing a book, like his perspective, her perspective, because mm-hmm. blended families are becoming so much more common. And just like the struggles that we went through in the early days of trying to meld the situation are so universal, as I have discovered, that I think it's really useful for the person, for both people to be able to empathize and understand what the other person is experiencing. And so I think like this book, you know, this imaginary mm-hmm. book that has not been written could be really useful for couples who are deciding to enter this situation to just kind of have a roadmap of like, here's what we're going to encounter. And like, here's how it's going to look from the other person's perspective. And here's how totally normal it is for me to feel the way I do from my perspective.
I would love to see that book. I haven't seen anything like it. I'm a number one. I have to be the number one checker outer of books mm-hmm. at the library.
Yeah, I don't think it exists.
Thank you.
That book does not exist.
Thank you for your library patronage.
Seriously, like I talk about libraries like other people talk about like chocolate cake. I'm just like, libraries are magic. Mm-hmm. They're one of the signs the world is still working.
Yes.
And now there's fewer signs than ever. But libraries are one of those things. I've always felt like that.
Yeah.
But speaking of like magic or any sort of light at all. But I noticed you've been writing and participating in the resistance, which is, we all are in this room.
Big time.
And I wondered if you had hoped, like, or if you had experienced any, like, moments, that kind of feeling, like any moments of hope mm-hmm. in the past, you know, 3 weeks since the inauguration, at all. Like, have you experienced those moments where you're like, I'm going to take that and I'm going to put it in my Tetris block and I'm going to make it into a thing, because if I don't, I'm going to lose track that there's anything
totally
going on that is really working right now.
Well, obviously the marches and the protests and, you know, the women's march was amazing. And Nancy Lyon standing on that stage and Ilhan Omar standing on that stage and the sea of bodies at the Minnesota State Capitol was incredible. But one of the things that I've been thinking about that I feel actually really heartened by is this is a chance for us to wake up, you know, as to like what democracy actually requires. I feel like we've been asleep in this country for decades. And, you know, I mean, when 9/11 happened, our president at the time, his big advice on how to reclaim our sense of patriotism and serve our country was to go shopping.
Yep.
And we have been just anesthetized by TV and shopping and wealth and distractions.
Yes.
And I think we were put to sleep and we forgot that democracy requires citizenship, and citizenship is an active thing, and it requires people to be informed and engaged and in communication with each other and their representatives. And I think we're waking the fuck up.
Yes.
And I think it's beautiful and powerful and amazing. And obviously it took a monstrous event that is currently unfolding to get us there. But I think that that is an amazing consequence of what has been unfolding. And I think it will continue to get stronger. And I think like there's the potential for this to be moving in a beautiful, powerful, empowered direction.
I agree. And I had a friend point out that we have been referring to ourselves as taxpayers and not citizens.
Yeah.
And how we actually detach from the word citizen in a way that for me wasn't active, but it felt like something I wasn't worthy of, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I've ever referred to myself as a taxpayer either, but I felt like citizen was almost like a military type, like I elevate, you know, people that serve, of course. I mean, right? Mm-hmm. But I also think of like citizens as people who are doing active work.
All the time.
And I don't think that was really me. Right. And this was at a time too, where I was in my early 20s. Like, I'm not thinking of anyone but myself. I'm certainly not thinking of my country. Mm-hmm. Right. Like when 9/11 came about, and I was like, my God, I didn't even think about the word citizen, except like an upright citizens brigade, which because I'm obsessed with sketch comedy and I always have been, and visiting there was like a big checkoff of my life. But I hadn't even thought about that word. So I agree so much with what you said. I hate that it had to come to this so much. But have you ever witnessed something as like that brought people together?
It's galvanizing. I mean, it's like it's completely inspiring people to action in a way that I think is, new in my experience.
And people that are so not the types. We talked about this in the episode we recorded earlier, like the not the types that would typically be called to action, but they're seeing enough discomfort that they are, which is another problem in and of itself, we know.
Yeah, I think for me, the distinction, like when I hear you say we are finally waking up, I realized that for me, the we is like white people are finally waking up because we have had so much privilege and power.
That's the thing I was referring to.
Like I was reading through Twitter the other day and I followed D. Ray McKesson. He used to work for Minneapolis Public Schools and then was just doing a lot of stuff with Ferguson. And I was like one of our modern day well-known activists. And he tweeted the other day something the effect of like how now protests are being seen as patriotic. And he's like, it's been a really long 2 years.
Oh, because my gosh, I can't imagine.
He was protesting, and so many people of color were protesting what was going on. And I am sad that it had to get to this place where, I'll just speak for myself, that I, as like a white person, finally had to wake up out of my like lulled monotony of like, 8 years of Obama and it's fine. I didn't really do anything. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't being an active participating citizen. Mm-hmm. But it's also, that word also has like some difficulties for me as well, because Like I have students and I have students' parents who aren't legal citizens, mm-hmm. but they are paying taxes, you know? And like we always say in my job, we're always like, we are responsible to the taxpayers because all of our money comes from the public.
Yeah.
And then I like saying the little taxpayer thing because I like it to be a dig on our president who like bragged about not paying taxes, to which I wanted to say, fuck you.
Shameful.
You shouldn't even be able to be in the running if you're not paying your fucking taxes. So
yeah.
I don't know. It's like I hear the things you're saying and then I like, I don't know, like the devil's advocate sometimes I'm like flip on the other side, you know,
totally.
And it's a good uncomfortability or tension to have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this is the whole thing, right? We're hearing each other.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing each other and we're like, we're just sharing these things that we haven't been talking about at all.
And we're insisting that our representatives listen to us, I think, in a new way. I mean, I'm referring to specifically, and like what I've never seen this level of like engagement of like daily actions of call your representative and tell them XYZ and people doing it.
Yeah.
And
posting about it. It's like all people are posting about
it. It's like being an active participant in democracies is like the sexy cool thing in a way that I've never seen.
Oh yeah, no, like legit, I have changed, like I have like a couple of thresholds for dating because I'm about to like finally like jump back into online dating, and my questions used to be like, what do you like to read? Not just do you, just like, what do you like to read? Because if you don't read or consume information in some form, I don't understand you. And within the last year, I added in, like, are you a feminist? And then it's going to, like, when I jump back in, it's going to be, like, did you vote? And then, you know, have a follow-up question. Because, like, if you didn't even have, like, if you were able to vote, there was no one preventing your vote. And in the state of Minnesota, we have same-day registration. So it's pretty easy if you have the few things required, which not everybody does. And that's a whole nother systemic thing. But I'm like, if you had the ability to vote and you chose not to,
peace out.
Yeah, or like you chose to vote for
no
someone
sex
who
for you.
Yeah, 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 like you chose to vote for someone who's like diametrically opposed to everything in my life. I'm just like, no. It's there's a John Waters quote where he's like, we have to make books cool again. Like if you go home with someone and they don't have any books, don't fuck them. And I'm like, yes. And engaging in democracy where I'm just like, oh, you didn't engage? Peace. Like, and this is good. We would have so much fun. But no, you get none of this. Bye. Like,
but engaging in politics is not engaging in politics is a luxury that we can't afford anymore.
Totally.
No.
And like Keith Ellison, one of our representatives says, oh, you're not into politics? Well, politics is into you.
Mm.
And that's like one of my, right? It's one of my favorite things. Mm-hmm. First Muslim U.S. representative in the nation, right? Hails from Minneapolis. We're so proud to say that and know that that's part of who we are. But to like, it isn't. It is like, nobody gets that chance anymore because of the current state we're in. I don't feel like. And I'm tethering myself to Instagram right now because I can't handle places where people are posting about other things that aren't politics because I'm angry at them. I was at least a week ago or so.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm like, I understand people need to practice self-care and like don't.
It's a marathon, not a sprint and all
right.
that.
Yeah. And we're only, 14 days in and we don't know how to do this.
And I will say to Quentin, his approach, and it's a source of tension sometimes because I'm very much more like active. I want to act. I want to speak up. I want to go to the rally. I want to call my representative. And in his approach, and he does those things too, mostly because I make him. but he meditates every day. He spends up to 45 minutes a day meditating. And I was just reading this beautiful interview with this poet in Vermont who was talking about the tradition of Christian mysticism and in other cultures where contemplation and prayer and visions are actually equally powerful in changing our cumulative reality and in inviting the energy and the spirit that we of the direction we want to move in. And so I have to remember that too, that standing on a block and screaming and shaking my fist is one way to do it. And sitting in contemplation and prayer is, while it is less flashy and, you know, or like not tweeting about it or whatnot, there that people
not performing it.
Yeah, exactly. Not performing it, but really like cultivating it from the inside out and, inviting it, you know, I think that that's equally valid and necessary.
I believe strongly in the power of meditation. I mean, it has created spaces that I really needed in my life. I've just started in the last year or so.
Yeah.
But it's sort of...
It's powerful.
It is. Mm-hmm. It's sort of surprisingly powerful. And things, like I learned how to do yoga nidra, which is like a guided meditation.
Oh my God, my therapist has been trying to get me to do that for years. I have all the materials.
I'm going to teach a class.
Okay.
Okay. It's yogic sleep. So you get the benefits of sleep. It's a 30 to 40 minute meditation. You could feel like you've slept for 2 or 3 hours.
Wow.
And it's amazing. A guided meditation. So even if you have a wandering mind, you're hearing someone's voice that you
bringing
can come
you back
to
yeah.
every time. But in the middle and at the end, you create like a intention. It's in Sanskrit, it's called a sankalpa. And it's an intention though. Mm-hmm. And everything I've set has come true.
Wow.
Shut up.
So now
God, why haven't I been doing this? Like literally years.
You
I should have been sitting on
this. Sign me up for your workshop.
I know. I'm going to start teaching, which is another thing, is I'm going to start teaching yoga and meditation on March 1st. And that's exciting.
Love
it's
like, it.
It is exciting.
Kind of like making step towards this different life that I want. And I'll do a workshop like every few months
okay.
as part of that. So I really want people. I want to like give the gift of yoga nidra to like, if I could wrap it up in a box and present it to you as your favorite thing in a box, I would do it. Mm-hmm. I would make a list of everybody's favorite things and I wrap them up and I'm like, and in order to accept these gifts, you need to take my yoga nidra workshop. That's how powerful it's been in my life. Like I'm afraid to set the next thing. And you're like hyper specific.
Wow.
Every single one of them. I've changed it like every couple months and every single one of them. Has come true.
Super cool. Awesome.
It is. And it's like, I know you guys are looking at me right now in the way that you believe me because I just don't really fuck around.
No.
Right?
No,
like,
you don't.
Like
oh it's one God. Of the things I love about you.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's like to have it happen the first time, I was like, okay, it happened once.
Yep.
And then it happened the second time and I was like, okay, I'm listening.
Keep it coming. Keep it coming.
I'm listening. Right. And then the third time I was like, okay, this works.
Yeah.
This is not a joke.
Amazing.
So I totally believe in it. And when you said that, he does that. I'm proud of anyone who takes the time to do it because it like 40 minutes of meditation creates hours and a longer practice, like over time, it exponentially grows the amount of space it creates in your brain and in your place on the continuum.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited. I'll sign you both up.
Yay.
Good.
Consider yourself on my mailing list.
Do it.
Yes.
Well, let's wrap up. This has been so great. Both
so
episodes
great.
Were
Wonderful.
So great today. You're the best.
You're the best.
Aww. You're the best.
So you can find more about Mo, our guest today, on Twitter and Instagram at MoMoPerry. You'll never forget that now. I never did. And also at MoMoPerry.com.
Yo.
You've got the stronghold on Momo Perry.
Don't come like for me. It. I got it locked down.
And this is Kate, and you can find me at clever-kate.com or on Twitter and Instagram at cleverkate.
This is Ashley, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at andcowlix.
Nice. You can find this podcast on mathishard.net or anywhere you listen to podcasts, including iTunes. XOXO.
JK.
Booyah.
Thanks again to National Machine for their promotional consideration of XOXO JK. Go build cool stuff with them at nationalmachine.co.